What's your favorite?
How did you go?
What do I
be?
What's it all to?
Where did all go?
Why do we know?
Oh, forget it.
Soren, Bowie, Daniel O'Brien. Two best friends and comedy writers. If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.
So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and YouTube fan Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hi.
Hi, I'm Soren Bowie. I write for American Dad. I also like YouTube. I think it's not bad. I like watching The Moment People Die. There's a lot of those.
God.
Space Cow puts those out. No. Sorry. Like they die inside.
Oh, okay. Jesus.
Yeah. I'm not watching snuff films on YouTube.
Yeah.
but it's just like, yeah, these moments where something goes terribly wrong for somebody and you can like see it in their eyes. And that's just sort of like watching that emotional turmoil for someone is always, I have an insatiable appetite for.
Thanks to Avast for supporting Quick Question. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a range of features. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/QQ. Start living a better life today.
It occurred to me recently that YouTube might be, it's very obvious, but it might be my favorite invention of my lifetime. I get unfathomable amounts of joy from just watching random YouTube videos because every video, no matter what it is, there's also the implied story of the person who decided to make that video, which is very exciting to me.
Yeah.
You can find anything. And like I was recently looking up, I wanted to know the best way to clean my specific vacuum. And I watched a 35-minute video of this guy from somewhere in Illinois who felt compelled to make this vacuum cleaning video because he watched a bunch of the other videos in this space. And he was like, all these people, the people who are making these videos about cleaning their vacuums, no offense, they're a bunch of wussies. They're a bunch of Instagram models, wussies, who don't really use this vacuum for like industrial purposes. So I'm going to do like for grownups how to clean this vacuum.
Yeah.
Like, this is...
He found a hole.
Yeah, and like, first of all, I'm gonna learn how to clean my vacuum from an expert, and that is the thing that I wanted. But B, there's this whole new world that opened up of this guy who like this fucking 40-something-year-old man who was watching a bunch of videos about cleaning vacuums on YouTube and was like, no, none of these people are tackling the real shit. I gotta get in. I have a responsibility to make a vacuum cleaning video for adults, and I'm gonna do it.
I guess you watching YouTube is really the way that I would ordinarily consume television when I was younger, which is like I'm letting it take me where it wants to go.
Yeah.
Like I'm following the rails, I'm letting videos insta-play. Like I will watch a bunch of videos on dry aging beef, and I haven't eaten beef in over a decade. I would be great at it now, I think. And just watching how they do it, I'm like, oh, and then I see you got to sous vide it afterwards. That's the way. And then you just do like a quick sear on each side. Okay. Oh, you're not going to season it. Oh, you are seasoning it, but you wait till the end. I see. So the salt actually gets in. Like I'm deeply invested in something I will never, ever, ever, ever use.
I watch so many cooking videos and I love everyone who makes these videos. I was watching one, this guy was making a different mushroom pasta recipe that is different from the ones that I normally make every single night. And at one point in the video, he was like, now I know a lot of people are going to comment, why aren't you using garlic? You should use more garlic. You never use garlic. I've probably used more garlic than any one of you, than all of you combined. And I was like, this is such a fucking rich, dense text. There's so much built into this simple cooking video.
There's a conversation clearly happening between him and the people.
Yeah.
I also use it all the time for home projects. Like I've solved so many things in my house because I don't know how people did it in the olden days. When I say olden days, I mean like 1996. But yeah. Like, when my hot water heater stops working, or like I've got a light that all of a sudden, even the bulb's not loose, but there's something wrong with the circuit itself that the light is like flickering a little bit. Like, I just go in there and I'm like, all right, well, let's see what this issue is. And then I'll watch 4 or 5 videos on it and be like, I know how to solve this now.
Yeah. I do it with like cleaning videos too, which is not just like cleaning my vacuum, but like to just go down the rabbit hole of searching on YouTube how to clean a bathroom. It's the kind of thing that I feel like I know already because I've been cleaning bathrooms for most of my life at this point. But it's still like, I'm open to getting some tips. And there's a whole universe of people who just make videos about how to clean things.
Yeah.
And they're delightful.
I also use it, and this is the only one that frustrates me, is if I have some sort of internet problem. I'm like, all right, well, let's figure out how to solve this. I'm not good at following just directions when they're in text, but like if somebody's doing the video and I can like follow along, I'm like, okay, great, I got this. But my wife will come up to me and because now I'm like a guy who gets these things, but I don't. I'm stealing it from online. So when she's like,
yeah,
hey, I lost this Word document, can you get it back? I'm like, I'm going to try and do this like in the most non-patronizing way, but all I'm going to go do is look it up. You could do the same thing.
Just put on a whole show of Googling right in front of her.
Yeah. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. Don't go. I want you to see this. You see this little bar up here?
Reading articles out loud to her.
It's also helped as a dad too, because my son will be like, I saw a kid in my class make an origami, a crane. He doesn't know the word origami. But he's like, I saw a kid in my class make a bird out of paper. And I'm like, okay, I think you're talking about an origami crane. I can help you do that. All we got to do is watch a video. Or we make like the very best paper airplane there is.
Yeah.
And he's way into it. And it's just watch a step, pause. And suddenly I can make something incredible for him.
Avast is a global leader in cybersecurity for more than 30 years and trusted by over 435, wait for it, million users. That's so many. Avast empowers you with digital safety and privacy no matter who you are, where you are, or how you connect. Enjoy the opportunities that come with being connected on your terms. Avast has a new all-in-one solution, Avast One, that helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a range of features. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. I am quite famously in front of a computer all the time. I work in the computer. I mail in the computer. I order my food in the computer. So I need it to be safe. I need to feel like my privacy is secure. So I love Avast, award-winning antivirus that stops viruses and malware from harming your devices. Data breach monitoring. They enable you to find out if your online accounts have been compromised and whether your passwords need to be changed. Mine do. They also have ransomware protection, secures your personal photos, documents, and other files from being modified, deleted, or encrypted by ransomware attacks. They also offer a smart scan. You can find and remove viruses and resolve the most common privacy and performance issues through an optimization scan. Avast One offers both free and premium options. Avast prevents over 1.5 billion attacks every month. And with Avast One, you can confidently take control of your online world without worrying about viruses, phishing attacks, ransomware, hacking attempts, and other cyber crimes. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. Should we do the show?
Yeah, I think we should. In fact, you know, it's actually helpful, Daniel, because you mentioned that this, like, what possessed this middle-aged man to do this?
Yeah.
I had another run-in with a middle-aged man.
All right. What could that mean?
I had another run-in while I was running. And I guess I've talked about multiple altercations I've had while running on this podcast. And at this point, I have to assume that the problem is me. Like, maybe the middle-aged man I really met was myself. really had to come to terms with the fact that I'm doing something wrong out there because there shouldn't be this many. But I want to describe this one to you, and you can tell me what you think of the circumstance. I was running. I got to an intersection, had a light, and it's a big intersection. There's two lanes going in each direction, and I don't wait for the light. I take a look at, I assess the traffic situation. I see that there's no cars. I see that on my left, there is a car, but it's about 200 yards away. Mm-hmm. And I think I can beat that. And it's on my left. So it's like, it's the closest that I'm going to be to that car is when I first step out into the street. And then about 10 steps later, I'm out of its way. So I cross the street on my run and I hear this car start honking. Just like a beep, 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 beep. And I'm like, yeah,
okay,
what is going on? And I kind of like look at this car as it goes by and it comes and it makes a left turn. So it's kind of like following me and my, it, as I'm crossing the street, it's also going to start going the same direction as me. And as he's making the turn, it's like an old beat up Isuzu Trooper. And the guy in it is probably like 55. Mm-hmm. And he rolls down his window and he says to me three words. Special white man. And then as he's driving away, he puts his middle finger out the window forever. Like it's as far as I can see him in the distance, it's still out the window, this middle finger. And I'm like... I'm blown away, first of all, because I'm like, is he talking to me? Oh, the other detail of the story that you need, this is a white guy. This is a white.
Oh, yeah. That's a twist.
Yes. So that's like where I really got hung up on it, because this is also a white guy. And I would say like pushing 60, if not over 60. And for that demographic,
yeah,
to be using that pejorative, I thought this is like weirdly inspirational, like yeah, that he chose that, because he could have chosen a lot of things to call me that would have been a little more problematic. He could have used a hard F bomb. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean fuck. He could have used, he could have called me a crass name for the female genitalia. Like there's sure, a lot of words that I won't even really use anymore.
What have you projected his intention to be? Because I was thinking special white guy was the rules don't apply to you.
Yes.
You don't have to wait for a light.
Yes. I think that's right? Absolutely true. Okay. I think that that's where what he was angry about was that I didn't wait for the light, even though it didn't affect him in any way and it didn't affect anyone else in any way. He was mad that I made the decision instead of following the law, which he was looking for a reason to be mad. And I get that. I can relate to that man on that level because I'm always looking for reasons to be mad.
Sure.
And
I mean, the world's so great for you. You're a special white guy. You really have to search to find reasons to be mad.
Again, like shots fired, but they're fair shots. So the fact that that was even in his lexicon, that this this man who was not of my generation at all, that was, I highly doubt perpetually online. I guess it's possible. But that he was like aware of that as a pejorative. I was like, this is impressive. It is made mainstream now. This isn't just an online interaction. This is like in the real world. And here's somebody who, by all means, could have had a Trump sticker and I wouldn't have batted an eye on that Isuzu Trooper.
Right. It's a couple of surprising things. It's the fact that he's mad at you in such a new and modern way. It's you know, special white man is something that one of his grandkids accused him of being. And you would think, I'm projecting on this guy as much as anyone else, but I would think if he sees you breaking the laws and he recognizes in you another special white man, he should be, I assume he'd be happy to see you. Like, yeah, the laws don't apply to us, buddy. Keep it up.
Yeah.
But he knows enough to be ashamed of himself and you.
Yeah. Which is, and like, yeah, that he's calling out somebody else within his group and being like, you're fucking it up for us.
Yeah. And I'm sure if he had more time to yell at you, he'd be like, I don't fully understand the nuances either, but I know what you're doing is wrong.
It reminds me of the time when you and I were walking to like Subway and we saw a guy like roll down his window and start whistling at a woman or start calling a woman.
Yeah.
And we said something along the lines of, hey, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah. You're being generous when you say we. I was frozen in shock. And you said, we don't do that anymore. You're very matter of fact. They're like, no, we're not allowed to be cartoon wolves at women anymore.
It was like,
and then he like circled the block to yell indistinguishably at you.
Yeah. Yeah. He continued to scream at us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought about the entire time that I was at the gym after that and like going through these different waves where like part of me was like, he wasn't satisfied because he then stuck his finger out the window for eons. It's still out for as far as I know. So he wasn't satisfied with the way it had gone, or maybe my reaction, because I was still pretty bewildered and didn't have a reaction. And I was like, part of me was like, oh, I wish he would have circled back. I would have loved to have had an altercation with this guy and figured out what really was going on. And then I like, it did like just these, this like this wave of euphoria too, where I was like, we're doing it, man. Like the world's getting better.
I do like, even though I do think this guy is now on the right side of history, I sense so much conflict in him, and I want to be in the car with him after that, because I feel like he sees you and he's like, this ubermensch looking white guy breaking the rules. I know I'm supposed to be mad about that. My grandkids yelled at me for that. I'm gonna say something to this fucking prick, because that's not how we do things anymore. Special white man. Special white man. Special fuck. That wasn't it. Special. I was a real panic. Special white. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I only had three words. What else was I supposed to? I needed to get white and man in there. I wanted him to feel bad. Special white man. You think he's still there? I'm gonna pull back.
You know what? I'm gonna workshop it. Maybe I'll come back the next time tomorrow. People generally run around the same time. Maybe I could catch him again. Or like being like, you know, I'm gonna chalk this one up as a learning opportunity, and I'll be better the next time.
He gets home and talks to his partner, or whatever. Like, oh, you should have seen me. I called him a special white. You call him a special white man? Yeah. Are you certain he knew what you meant by that? He seemed real bummed, and then I flipped him off for like 14 minutes.
I sort of wonder, like, when his retelling of the story, how it actually went. Because I gave you what I feel is a pretty unbiased and true telling of the story. But I think, like, in order for the story to make sense to anyone else, is he can't be like, so this guy, he's like three blocks away, and I can see he's crossing the street up there, so I start honking. I just start going at it. I lay on my horn. Obviously, by the time honking. I get there,
I forgot the prologue of the honking.
But by the time I get there, he's off the street. No, the way he has to tell the story is, this man ran out in front of me, didn't even look in my direction. Like, that story has to be that, because otherwise it just is, he can't get into it without somebody still being like, I'm sorry, I need to stop you. Why? Why did you honk at this man? But yeah, anyway, these things keep happening to me on my runs. I don't know what I'm doing. I broke the law there. That's fair.
But he was not at risk of hitting you. He didn't have to change his
there was
gait
no chance. And not only that, so like he and I were essentially kind of becoming parallel at one point, you know, because I'm running across the street. He's coming on my left. He has to get into that middle lane. By the time he reaches me, like by the time the horn is like actually like within range where I'm like, oh, this is for me, I am across the street. I am running, like I'm like 15 steps onto the sidewalk by the time he actually reaches the intersection.
Yeah.
But he did not like the fact that he could see the light was green for him and there was somebody crossing the street.
Man.
Fine. That's fine. I get it, man. I get it. That's not how the rules go. And I love the rules, man.
Yeah. I had a really, really positive running weekend, opposite of your experience. I had a race this weekend. I impulsively signed up for another race. I signed up for a 10K, which is not a distance that I do.
That's 6 miles?
6.2. It's not one that I do often. Like, I leave the house, I'm doing a 5K no matter what, and that's like the flavor of race that I've been doing recently. Or I will do 5 miles, or I'll do 10 miles. I'm never doing 6.2 as like my distance. So I picked it just because I wanted a race to do and it was local. And it's a fun distance, but it's not, again, because I don't do it very frequently. I wasn't going in there thinking I was going to be very competitive or anything like that. I don't have like a track record of personal bests at this distance. So I'm just like, I'm just going to run for the sake of running. and it was great, and I made friends at the race.
What was the vibe of it? Does it feel more like a race this time?
Yes, it did. This was 1,100 people signed up for this race, and it was there's really no it's super corny. There's not a substitute for like race day vibes. It's everyone is so excited, and it's early-ish, and we've all got like this nervous energy, and we're all there, you know, 20 to 30 minutes before the race starts, just not on our phones, just like bouncing up and down, all of us warming up and stretching and getting ready and meeting each other.
Yeah. You're tailgating.
Start this thing. Yeah.
Everybody's drinking, having their hot dogs.
Of course, yeah. You down a couple of pre-race hot dogs. But it's great. And I made a friend, and then like it's one of those things that happens on race day where any port in a storm, really. So I make my one friend, and then when I see her on the course, I'm like, fucking ride or die for this bitch. I see her and I'm like, I'm pointing to her and I'm screaming like, we're doing it, you know?
Yeah, of course. How would she feel about you calling her a bitch?
She would feel great. Barbara, she would feel great.
That's what I figured. I figured you wouldn't do that unless it was already a comfort level between you two.
That's what I'm trying to get across here is the immediate camaraderie and intimacy that you form with these race day buddies.
Now, do you think that's like, would those friendships carry over? Like the way I could equate it is that when I go camping, I'll eat sardines, like in mustard. And I'm like, these fucking rule. How come nobody eats these? Like I should eat these in my everyday life. I should these stone wheat crackers with some sardines in a mustard sauce, like right out of the can. And, they're the most delicious things I've ever had. And then when I get home, I can't fathom it. It's disgusting. So when the lights are finally on at the end of the night, what I mean, like the magic is over of the race. Do you think that that's a relationship with Barbara that you could actually carry over? Or would you find out like, oh no, wait, Barbara sucks.
I am not interested in seeing her in any other context, but after the race, she was like, when's your next race? And I was like, I don't know. I'm looking at one in June in this town near me. And she's like, that's a great one. There's another one in Spring Lake. There's this one. And she's like listing all of the races coming up in the summer. And like, yeah, I hope to sign up for another race and see her somewhere. Yes. You know, it's a camp friend.
Yeah. I feel like the gym is a lot like that too, where like the people I know at the gym, I'm like, I love this. I love you in this environment.
Yeah.
Like we couldn't be better friends here. We're thick as thieves on leg day. But the minute you're like, they're like, oh, I'm also having this party at my apartment. And you go, you're like, oh shit, I don't like any of these people. Yeah. They're all calling me brother all the time still. Yeah. That's something we only say in the gym.
Yeah.
But that's exciting. I'm glad that the race went well. And I got a couple questions.
I think I did a coward's thing by booking this race. I think one of the themes that has popped up for me talking about races on this podcast is like, oh, I'm doing a 10K, which is not a distance that I do often, so it's whatever, it's low stakes. Or that 2.2-mile race that I did the last time that we talked about races where it's like, yeah, it's just for fun, it's not competitive. I think I'm subconsciously booking myself for races with a built-in excuse to make it low stakes. And I think I need to start getting serious. It's becoming more and more apparent to me that being fast is important to me, which seems like a very silly thing for an adult man to care about. But like, I want to be fast the way that like little kids want to be very fast. It's becoming important to me. And I think I need to start like actually, I'm going to sign up for a race and I'm going to say, I want to set records for myself. I want to place somewhere competitively and like actually go for it, which is a scarier thing to do than just like doing these casual random races that I've
been doing. Yeah. I mean, trying in earnest and failing is way scarier. Hey, everybody. You know as well as I do that life can be overwhelming. David Sedaris described it as like a stove, that you've got all these different burners, and not every burner can be on full blast at the same time. So in order to be present with your family or your career or whatever you determine as your personal success, you have to turn down one of the other burners and you can't concentrate on it as much. And what happens when you do try to burn all those burners at the same time? You burn out, right? We associate burnout with work generally, but that's not always the case. Any of the roles in our life can lead us to feeling burned out, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing the stress in your life. I feel burnt out a lot. I used to feel out even more so. I think I've found now ways that I can kind of deal with it in my life. But for a long time, I was trying to do just too much. And that doesn't mean too much to be a successful in my career. It means that I was like, I was just trying to do too much across the board. It just wasn't working. And I didn't ever prioritize taking time for myself. Well, BetterHelp can help you figure out how to better balance your life. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers videos, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist so that you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Quick Question listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/QQ. That's BetterHelp.com/QQ. I think that's exciting, though. I think there's no, you should not feel bad about wanting to be fast.
It's, I mean, bro, try to talk to someone in your life about being fast, though. I was telling coworkers, I was like, I had a race this Sunday, and they're like, oh, how was it? I was like, good, I'm really fast.
Oh, you're faster.
I'm faster this year than I was last year, and I feel good about it. It's so dorky.
But like to test your measure against other people, test your mettle against other people is like, that's a natural instinct to be like, I've been working on this thing for a very long time. I wonder if I'm comparatively good at it now.
Yeah. I was 11th in my age group this year, which is just a fucking death sentence for me. Because if I was, I don't know, 14th or 25th or something like that, or any other number, then I just feel like, yeah, this is roughly the speed I'm at, but like 11th is very close to like a serious contender speed for me. Then I'm like, well, shit, now I feel like it's within my sights.
Yeah, it's striking distance.
Not first. I don't think I'm ever going to be first. I'm watching the guy who was the leader this entire race, and I don't have that, but like crack at the top 10, crack at the top 5, that might be a possibility. And that's like exciting, but also as soon as I see those results, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a lot of work, isn't it?
So give me a sense of how big is the age range. Is this, are you in a group that's like 3 years apart, or are you in a group that's like a decade?
It's like a decade, yeah.
And you were, what,
13th?
11th. Do you know how many people there were?
In the race, there were 1,100 people. In my age range, I don't know.
God, I got to assume that you it feels like the wheelhouse. A six-mile race feels like the wheelhouse for people your age. So I have to assume that majority of them were. And you got 11th.
Yeah.
That's really good, Daniel.
Thank you. I had 10 in my sights, and I didn't know it was 10, and I let him beat me.
Yeah, but that was the etiquette. That
I was just being a gentleman.
You can't
and then I saw
past.
The results, and I was like, no, never mind. I had that fucking guy.
Well, oh, man. You're fucked. You have to now race.
I know.
Now, that was a race that you hadn't trained for at all. You don't ever run 6 miles, and you came in 11th. That means that without even trying, you could come in better than that next time.
Yeah.
Are you going to stick with these, or are you going to find your wheelhouse? Are you going to be like, I'm a 5K runner or something like that?
That's a really good question. What do you think I should do? Because I do feel like 5K is my best shot to get faster quickly. Like if I wanted to make that my goal this year within like literally 12 months. But I do think just anecdotally, 5Ks are more competitive than 10Ks.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have a lot more people who think that exact same thing about 5Ks. Yeah. They're like, that's going to be a group that's much bigger and much more competitive. I mean, a 10K is not a race a lot of people want to do. There feels like that's like a little window that gets wiped over, because 5K, very, very popular. Then like the 10 mile race, or the 11 mile races are also very, very popular. Yeah. But like in between, nobody really touches that area. I think that could be it.
What goal should we set for me? I'm never going to be first.
Tell me what your splits were.
I don't have my phone, which has that information, but it was all sub 8 miles.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck, that is fast, Dan. You are fast.
Can I talk to your coworkers? I'm really fast.
Here's the thing. I don't think that they know. Maybe they don't run right. they don't know that that just like if they were to just go run a mile as fast as they could, they would not do a sub 8 by itself. And you're running it stacked on top of 6 or 5 other ones.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is race atmosphere. You're always faster on race day.
Was it cloudy?
It was so cloudy, and it was the coldest it has been in New Jersey in weeks.
Perfect race
It dipped
conditions.
Down, and it got so windy. There were, like, wind warnings this weekend. Like, even when I'm driving, my phone is saying, like, hey, there's a wind advisory, so just be careful driving. So it was super cold the morning of the race and gray.
Did you? So I have another question. At any point when you guys were like in a headwind, did you like flirt with the idea of drafting?
No.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's like strategically positioning yourself behind someone.
Yes.
To block the wind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like catch their wake, and like their wake carries you.
Right.
Did you have headwinds during it?
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, you're going to be so much faster.
I know, but I have to put my ass on the line then. And I have to say, yeah, I'm going to try to be very fast. And I can't do my stupid coward move of just like, oh, it's whatever. I'm just doing it for fun. It doesn't count.
Well, yes. But the nice thing is that when you specify which type of racer you're going to be, a lot of other stuff falls away. Like right now you're just like hunting. You're just like, I'll do any race. Like, I'll just try a bunch of different races, see what I like. And now that you get to like close a bunch of those doors, you get to really just focus on this one thing and be like, okay, this is now what I do. I'm going to run 5 miles, 7 miles. And then like between there, I'm going to figure out exactly how I'm going to get my 6 mile to be faster than my 5 or like whatever it is. That's exciting. I think that's exciting for you. You have like something to like set your sights on.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Well, you've got a family to raise.
Yeah. My wife she's coming up good. I think my wife is going to be a good person someday, like just because of all the work I put in.
I had a random quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Have you still not gotten COVID yet?
I haven't gotten COVID.
That's like low-key, very embarrassing. I cannot believe you haven't gotten COVID yet. Everyone's getting COVID.
It has been like the hit of the summer.
Yeah.
Already. And I just haven't like buckled down and done it.
Yeah.
You remember how humiliated you were when you got it?
Yeah, but you know, I felt that way after I lost my virginity too. You still gotta do it.
Something very dark, thick text just appeared before my eyes. Like, what is this story? What happened to Daniel? So our CFO got it, and you got it, and Gabe has gotten it, and everyone at my work at this point and their families have all gotten it. I am one of the last holdouts of people who haven't gotten it. And I'm not, I mean, I have.
It's genuinely remarkable. Like I've had coworkers who've gotten it twice. I've had family members who've gotten it. And I don't mean to make light of this very serious thing, but it does seem like more and more people who are vaxxed and boosted have gotten it and had like I did, a very mild COVID. And it just seemed like, normalized enough that this was going to be like a regular thing for human beings going forward. It's like, oh yeah, remember that crazy thing, COVID? Yeah, I got COVID this time. It took me out of work for 5 days. Like, everyone's getting it, and you just still haven't.
We were particularly careful for a very long time because of our daughter. She is still breastfeeding specifically for that reason. Like, it's ordinarily we would not have taken her all the way to 2 years old breastfeeding. We would have stopped at probably one, but it's so helpful for, especially if Colleen gets it first, then you have the chance of like giving some antibodies to her as she contracts it. But we were very careful about everything that we did for a very long time. And that was, I would like to think that that's part of it, but I have been way more reckless lately. Like, I go to the gym now, and that's a very small space in which maybe 10% of the people are wearing masks. And I've gone to work events and things like that. Colleen has too. And they're indoor, they're enclosed. There's a lot of people sitting around, or like a lot of glad handing too. And we've just gotten really lucky. And I am fully
anticipating. Is there anything in your life that you don't do because of COVID still?
Yeah, there are a few things. Like, we won't go to a movie. I certainly wouldn't take my kids. I won't go to a movie. I wouldn't take my kids to a movie. We don't do like bowling. We don't do indoor enclosed, like kids museums and things like that. We just don't do.
Okay.
If we're going to go do activities with the kids, it's outdoors with like a very few exceptions. There have been some birthday parties that we've gone to in which some of it is indoors, but for the most part we've done, you know, it doesn't even feel like we're doing it on purpose anymore. It's just like the lifestyle changed and we just fell into stride with it. But now that you mention it, yeah, I mean, the majority of the stuff that we do when we take the kids places is exclusively outdoors. We've just been careful. And that doesn't mean like the people who've gotten it are not being careful. We've just gotten very, very lucky. And I expect that we will at some point get it.
The biggest change I've noticed is that the people who were getting COVID were also being incredibly careful. It wasn't reckless people. It wasn't people going out and partying. It was like, to use an imperfect word, normal people doing every basic precaution you'd expect. And then suddenly it's like, oh shit, I got COVID from just like being a person who exists in the world. That's why it's so surprising you didn't get it.
Well, we are doing a trip this weekend and we will be on a plane. And so I'm going to have lots of good opportunities coming up.
Where are you going?
A wedding. So lots of really great opportunities.
Oh, yeah. No.
I have been to other weddings. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I remember last summer when it felt like the door had closed on COVID, when everyone was celebrating its death and it was like a mission accomplished situation.
Yeah.
And I went to, we flew to Minnesota, which is like a long flight, lots of people on the planes, lots of people in the airports. We went to two weddings while we were in Minnesota over the course of 3 weeks and spent just like a ton of time with other people. And then you realize when you go to other states that aren't New York or California, nobody gives a shit about COVID anymore.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is over it. Nobody's wearing masks. There's no signs on windows or anything. Businesses don't give a shit if you come in or if you're vaccinated. And we did that, and we just sort of were like, well, if we get it, we get it. And we didn't.
Man. Well, I hope you go a perfect game and you never get it.
No, you don't. You call me. What did you, let's see. What did you say to me? It's embarrassing. You call me embarrassing. Yeah. Replaying it now. That's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's not embarrassing. It's fine. Dan, I have a quick question for you.
Shoot.
In your apartments that you've lived in, I mean, you upgrade over time. You like, you unlock certain achievements where you realize there's different ways to live and you don't have to continue living the way you first did when you got an apartment. We're just kind of like, well, I guess I'll figure it out. Along that way, are you still having moments where you think, well, I don't have to live like this, and like moving on to something bigger and better? I'll give you an example of like one that just came up for me.
Yep.
Was that I do this podcast out of the back of my garage, which if you see the space, it's not a livable space. It's like there's paint cans, paint thinner in one corner, tiles for the backsplash, like all the supplemental stuff for inside the house in case things ever break. And then on the other side is just piles of loose wood and shelves that I took down and then thought, well, I'll save this in case I ever need it again. It's like sawdust, silverfish, I'm sure, swarming through it all, and like some tools and stuff. It's bad space. And I've been, while I was in here writing my script, I thought to myself, I don't fucking have to live like this. I could just make this a better space. I've got the rest of the garage is virtually empty because we cleaned it out for Colleen's 40th birthday. And in doing so, we realized that there was stuff for all of this. I mean, there's space for all of the stuff that we had in just the regular garage. And so now I'm just living back here in these piles of squalor, sitting in a supplemental dining room chair, not even like a real office chair, on a desk that we wanted to throw away. But we were like, well, we'll wait until we can actually do like a bulk throwaway. And then we will get rid of it. And then we just never did. And now it's my podcasting and writing desk. And like, I work out of here most days on my Zooms. Mm-hmm. And I just like, we're coming up on the season where it starts to get very sweaty in here because there's no air conditioning or anything. And I'm like looking around, and when I get on Zooms, I always have to explain it away. I think I could just, for not even that much money, just like take everything out of here and put a couch in. And put some shelves up and just live like a human being. This is like this last vestige of me after college, where I was just like, anything, give me a closet with a mattress in it and it smells like cat piss and I will live there for 4 years. I don't care.
Yeah, it takes me, one of my many faults is recognizing when I'm allowing myself to be treated poorly and doing something to change that. I'm very bad about it. I had a place for a while that had ants, and we got the ants as under control as we could get them, but it still meant I would clean up. Like, the ants were not an infestation, but a few ants would show up in the bathroom and die every day. There would be anywhere between 4 and like 15 dead ants, and I would just clean them up and like vacuum them up and throw them out. And like, I thought that was an acceptable way to live, for me to be treated. I was like, oh, this is the part of my day where I clean dead ants every single day. Could be worse. They could be live ants. So this is better. And then it takes like months and months and months of doing that and introspection to be like, hey, you know, I wonder, this will be a fun thought experiment. Do we think there's anyone in the world who doesn't have to clean up dead ants every day? And if so, do we think we deserve to be one of those people? It really takes a lot for me to like look at my surroundings and be like, hey, perhaps you don't need to be uncomfortable.
Yes. And the reason I ask you in particular is that I think that, like, for me, the outside influences that have always assured me that, no, there is a better way to be, have always come from two places. One, going to somebody else's house and like go and being like, oh shit, this is way better. I see. So the world can be different. Every day could be different. You can't do that during COVID. And then the other one is from my significant other. So like girlfriends and my wife, they've always been the ones who are like, you got to fucking change. I'm like, no, okay, I'll do it. Oh yeah, you're right. This is way better. So Colleen has already said on multiple occasions, she's like, why don't we do something back there? Like, why don't we make it better? And for whatever dumb fucking reason, I was like, I'm fine. It's fine back there. Don't change a thing. Like, getting almost argumentative about it. Like, no, don't worry. That's my space. It's my space. If I spill stuff on the floor, I like to be able to just have it on the floor. I like to be able to have sticky syrup from a Dr. Pepper I spilled 4 months ago on the floor. For no reason, just fighting it to fight it. And realizing, no, she's absolutely right. She's been right for months, and I should just change. And you don't, I mean, not to belabor the point, you are famously single. You don't have that angle as well.
Publicly single for branding purposes.
Publicly single. And so is it just, you're just having these realizations on your own where you're just like, I think the world could be different?
It's every once in a while. Yes, it's mostly me on my own, but I recently had my brother and sister-in-law over for board games and to see the house. And I was realizing the amount of things as I was doing the tour. I was like, here is this chair. I hate it. Here is this thing in the kitchen. It disgusts me. This thing over here is awful. And it's been here. And I look at it every day. And I was like making a mental list of like, you know, you can just get rid of those things. You can hide the things that you hate. You can change this tour so that like everything is a thing you like.
Yeah. I was thinking about that while I was like writing in this chair, being like, God, this chair is so uncomfortable. I guess this is just how life will be forever. I'm thinking, no, it's a dining room chair. It's meant to be sat in for one meal. It's not even like, I don't think dining room chairs expect you to sit on them for like breakfast and lunch. Dinner is all you do in a dining room chair. And so it's got this kind of like wooden back that's very decorative, but terrible. I mean, it's terrible for your spine, not conducive to it at all. And I've just been living in it every single day.
Yeah. It's wild pointing out like the recliner that I have in this house. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is the recliner. It kind of smells. It's a little bit weird. And I spend, I don't know, 90% of my day there.
What do you think? My dog won't even go on it anymore. Yeah. It clearly has a bad energy to it.
I would say the vast majority of me of my life is spent in this one spot, and I kind of hate it.
I realized it also as soon as I started thinking about this one. Maybe this is the reason I'm so resistant to it, is that as soon as I started thinking about this room, I was like, but Soren, there are all kinds of aspects in your life just like this. You could go upstairs to your dresser drawers and you wear about 10% of the shirts that are in there. And the other ones are problems for whatever reason. Like, I don't like the way this collar is. I don't like how long these sleeves are. I don't like the way this one makes my stomach look. Like, yeah. I could, there's all these places in my life that I could just be doing better and I'm not.
Man, that's a, clothing is a real Marie Kondo goldmine for me. If I just went into the closet that is like specifically the closet of clothes that I don't wear, there's the dresser with all the clothes that I wear, and then there's all my other clothes in this closet that like sometimes I open it and I'm like, no, none of these today. Obviously none of these. I'm not gonna get rid of them, of course. They still need to be here.
Yeah, like, where would I can't get rid of these. What if this comes back around? I'm in the same situation where I went to a work event the other night, and as I was getting ready for it, I was like, all right, well, I can't wear a short sleeve. I need something long sleeve, maybe a long sleeve button up. And I went and looked at them all, and I was like, I think that we are 4 cycles of fashion removed from these. They're like a bunch of pearl snap button shirts with plaid all over them. And they have like that Western kind of V on the breasts. Yeah. And I was like, I think it would be a problem if I went out in public like this. I think people would be like, would that man step out of a bunker somewhere?
Yeah.
Like, they're so old. Nobody is wearing those anymore. And yet they're still just lined my closets. And I'm like, I guess I got to start over.
Yeah.
I disagree with Marie Kondo, though. I don't think all your clothes should bring you joy. I think that it's silly to only feel one emotion from your clothes. I think that you should have at least 6 shirts that terrify you. Maybe a couple that make you feel like jealous.
Uh-huh.
And some that are just like sad, like some sad shirts.
I do need to put on unflattering clothes often because sometimes my ego gets too out of control and I need to like force myself to be humble. If I have like a big important work meeting, I'm like, no, you can't wear pink. That's way too powerful. You can't.
You're going in.
You're talking to your boss today. You cannot do that.
You're going to the
look
one
like shit.
That's got a pizza grease stain on the shoulder that has clearly been through 6 different washes. So it's like a little faded, but clearly still there.
Yeah.
You're going to go and repping this. I think Michael Swaim, when he first got divorced, had like a stand-up bit about that where he went on. You guys went on a cruise together. And Michael insisted that he walk around the cruise deck with his shirt off, even though he made him deeply uncomfortable, but he was just like, I would like to wallow in this shame for a while. Like, yeah. I want to feel terrible.
Really steered into it.
I think that could be it for us.
I think so too. It's not a bad episode.
No, I think it's funny.
Well, that about wraps it up. The show is Quick Question, but you knew that already. We are recorded, edited, and produced by the irreplaceable Gabe Harder. Our theme song is by the incredible Me Rex. Their digital album is available at merex.bandcamp.com. You want to reach out? You can find us all on Twitter. I'm DOB_INC. Soren is Soren_LTD. The show is QQ underscore Soren and Dan. You can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel at Gmail. And you can find us on Patreon and support us that way. We answer questions from you, the listeners, once a month. And it's our favorite thing to do. That is all.
Bye.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you. All right. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you. All right. The answer's not important. I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.